From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point.
Oh, say, can you see by the dawn's early light?
Stephen Colbert kicked off his brand new gig on late night TV on a Little League baseball diamond singing the Star Spangled Banner. On the Colbert Report, his patriotism was a gag. Now he seems to be singing it for real. This is week one of The Late Show with Stephen Colbert on CBS, and it's going to be real interesting to see whether the zany, subversive Colbert changes mainstream late-night TV or goes mainstream himself. This hour on Point, the soul of Stephen Colbert and where late-night TV, network TV, is going. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Did you stay up to watch this week? Did you laugh? Where's Colbert going with this? Join us anytime at On Point Radio or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. And how did they wrap up that national anthem? Pretty much like this with you-know-who, a certain John, throwing off an umpire's mask.
And the home of the
John Stewart for Stephen Colbert saying, play ball. Here's Colbert introducing, everybody wondered who it would be. He was visibly nervous. Who can blame him? He went before that cheering audience at the Ed Sullivan Theater in New York and introduced his new me.
Thank you for all joining me for my first episode of The Late Show With, starring Stephen Colbert. I am he. You are all witnessing television history. And like most history, it's not on the History Channel.
And on his second night, Colbert talking about what it means to be playing in the big leagues of network TV and whether he'll still be the old Colbert.
Now, naturally, I know what you're saying. You're saying some of you fear that I'll be corrupted by my newfound authority. So let me assure you, with millions of people watching us each night, talk show hosts are the leaders of our time. We are to the 21st century what Caesar, Napoleon, or Genghis Khan were to centuries past. Of course, our jobs are way harder. Those guys never had to compete with Adult Swim.
Caesar, Napoleon, and Genghis Khan. We don't have those three. We've got a pretty good lineup here. Joining me from Washington is Alyssa Rosenberg. She covers pop culture for the Washington Post's opinion section. Alyssa, welcome back to On Point. Great to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
And from New York, James Poniewozik is here, longtime TV critic for Time Magazine and now newly minted chief television critic for the New York Times. James, congratulations on the new gig and welcome back. Great to have you.
Thanks so much, Tom.
Alyssa, what do you think? Here's Stephen Colbert. Who do we get? Who popped out of the box?
Well, it's been interesting to watch Colbert go back to late night. I have to admit, I'm 30. I am one of the generation who sort of grew up with the Daily Show and the Colbert Report as these alternatives to late night television. I never really watched late night television as a habit.
And who needed it if you were in that cohort, right? With those offerings.
Well, and it's been interesting to watch Colbert go back to the medium that he deconstructed for a decade, right? Mm-hmm. It's like watching Neo go back into the Matrix and settle into this comfort in this form that he skewered so ruthlessly. And so it's been interesting to me the extent to which late-night television can't exist now without us thinking about those alternatives to it and those riffs on it. And, there's a little, simulacra and simulation about it. It's odd. It's almost uncanny.
James, what about it? He deconstructed mainstream TV for a decade. Yes, he did, as Alyssa says. Now he's in it. Who's got the power here? Is it Stephen Colbert? Is it Alyssa's 30-something viewers who may want that? Or is there something still buried in television that will take us back? I mean, even People Magazine says here, America finally reached the end of the Johnny Carson, Jay Leno, David Letterman saga, television's equivalent of the Trojan War. Are we well and fully out of that deconstructing and on the Colbert way now?
Well, Tom, I'm 47, and I'm of the generation that back in my day, we had a fellow by the name of David Letterman, Stephen Colbert's predecessor, back in his late night days with NBC, his show was very much about deconstructing while also reaffirming some of the traditions and conventions of late night television, and sort of acting as a response to and a riff on the, you know, kind of received phoniness of TV that we were always used to.
Yep.
So I think that there has been an element of that in a while. Yeah, I mean, for a while.
Mm-hmm.
What I think is very interesting.
The more subtle in Letterman's hands than in Colbert Report hands, where he just did a.
Well, the Colbert Report was a direct parody, not so much of late night television as it was of cable news commentary.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a very, you know, I think in a way the difference to me here isn't necessarily so much. Snarky versus earnest, or niche versus mainstream, but it's kind of specific versus general or broad. I mean, what works in a lot of comedy, and particularly cable comedy, is specificity. You know, being about a very certain thing. The Colbert Report was, you know, a very tightly executed and controlled performance of a single character. Who, you know, touched on a lot of subjects, but, you know, really worked in a single register and amazingly kept it up for just about a decade. By its nature, a late night hour long show is they call it variety for a reason. You're sort of throwing a lot of things in there. And I think, one thing that we're seeing there, as frankly you see with a lot of late night hosts, are, you know, numerous versions of Stephen Colbert. I think that the show is going to have to, you know, going to work toward how many of those and in what form it's going to show them to us.
Alyssa, he began with the Star Spangled Banner and an interview with George Clooney, who, of, you know, any of these late night guys would probably have been happy to have it any time over the last heaven knows how many years. That suggests that he's Star Spangled Banner and George Clooney, Clooney's maybe his politics notwithstanding, that he's running for something that feels middle America.
Oh, sure. I mean, I think much of the first episode of, you know, his new incarnation was, you know, I may be from New York, but I am not your enemy. The guy I was playing is not who I actually am. To me, the most telling moment and the most telling way of making that pitch wasn't even necessarily the Star Spangled Banner or the performance of Everyday People, but Colbert telling Jeb Bush that Bush was a candidate that maybe Colbert would be able to vote for. And he referenced that again on the second night of the show, right? And so even more than the outright patriotism of the Star Spangled Banner, Colbert is saying, you know, I'm flexible, I'm open to things, I am like you, I'm persuadable. It's basically a statement of, you know, third way moderation, right? It's I could vote for the Democrat, I could vote for the Republican, I can be, you know, whatever seems reasonable and what touches me. I mean, one of the things that's sort of funny has been watching him encourage both Jeb Bush and now Joe Biden to run for president. It's like he just wants everybody to run. Everyone's going to be his friends. I will be curious to see if he does the same thing to Donald Trump on September 22nd.
Yeah, we just got the news that he'll be on. Trump will join Colbert on the 22nd. Of course, everybody loves to joke about Trump. Colbert did a long riff on his very first night, saying having Trump as fodder for jokes was too good to be true, like eating Oreo cookies. Note the product placement. We'll talk about that. While chowing down on Oreos, he played a clip from Trump's infamous press conference with the Univision news anchor Jorge Ramos, had asked him how he planned to build a 1,900-mile wall along the border with Mexico. Here's what Trump said and Colbert's riff.
Can I tell you what's more complicated? What's more complicated is building a building that's 95 stories tall.
Yes, a border wall could not be simpler. Just build a 95-story building, knock it over 10,000 times. Then you keep the Mexicans out with a doorman.
James, I could hear that joke, the Colbert joke part there, coming straight out of David Letterman. Stuffing his face with Oreos at the same time, maybe that's where the Colbert angle comes in.
You know, I could hear that coming out of David Letterman, and I could also hear, you know, pretty much most of that bit on the Colbert Report, filtered through a different character and maybe, you know, from a voice that was more sort of mock approving of Donald Trump. But, you know, nonetheless, I think that, you know, we've seen a few bits from behind the desk like that this week on Late Show that were in many ways rapport-like. They've been some of the strongest comedy on this week. I suspect that the writers on the show are probably aware of that. And I think that they may, you know, if I'm guessing, find ways to do more of this, in the future, but without the character. I think that that sort of thing points out the kind of silliness of this game that we've been playing, me included, saying, who is the real Stephen Colbert?
Yeah.
Since he'd played a character for so long. I mean, again,
he's right there. Right,
I've done it myself. I've written about. Yeah, exactly. On the one hand, nobody is really themselves hosting a late night talk show. You're a performer creating a persona. We didn't see the real Johnny Carson. We didn't see the real David Letterman. And although you didn't necessarily see, the guy that you would have had over for dinner on the rapport, you saw the performer that was implied by that character, the guy who would find that character funny.
We've got Steve Colbert, man of the people, in this little bit with the house band Jean-Baptiste and Stay Normal. They closed the first night show with a bunch of stars, Mavis Staples, Buddy Guy, Derek Trucks, Ben Folds, Colbert himself, huge, rousing rendition of Sly and the Family Stone's peace and love anthem, Everyday People. James Poniewozik with the New York Times, Alyssa Rosenberg at the Washington Post. Please stand by. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Oh, folks, that sound is either the theme song to a 70s cop drama or the late show band Jean-Baptiste and Stay Human. Say hey, everybody.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We are talking about Stephen Colbert's debut as host of The Late Show with Stephen Colbert. Alyssa Rosenberg is with us from The Washington Post. James Poniewozik from The New York Times. You can join us as well. Do you welcome this Colbert? Are you watching? Will Colbert go mainstream? Will he change the mainstream? What did you like best in his shows this first week? What left you cold? What did you think of Colbert with Clooney, with Elon Musk, Jeb Bush, Scarlett Johansson, the Uber boss, Joe Biden? And what did you think of the on-the-air kind of pitching, shilling? On his first night, he tried to make light of what is apparently his obligation to show sponsors. Eat Oreos, have hummus, talk about hummus out there with a little riff about how to get this show, Colbert said, he had to swear a blood oath to the cursed amulet of Kapotek and the snakehead Assyrian fire god and to promise to do its bidding.
Ladies and gentlemen, the amulet commands me to inform you of the delicious taste of tonight's sponsor, Sabra Roasted Red Pepper Hummus. It's made from simple, fresh ingredients that bring people together one bite at a time. There! I've done your bidding.
Alyssa, is this where we're going? Are we back to the 1940s where we're talking about soap in the middle of the show and washing dishes?
You know, you have to make money to put a television show on the air, especially in a theater as nice as that one. Colbert's sort of good corporate citizenship doesn't just extend to things like Sabra hummus or Oreos. He's been a very strong plugger of CBS shows, whether he's worrying about getting replaced by The Mentalist or making Two Broke Girls jokes or flacking CBS's upcoming Super Bowl presentation.
Yeah, it's a little different than hummus and cookies, no?
I mean, it's a corporate product. It's especially given the quality of some of CBS's shows. I think there's something more noble about selling hummus than selling Two Broke Girls, if we're being totally honest.
Maybe. I mean, James, I don't want to get too holier than thou here in this new era of podcasts, where you can find On Point, of course. Lots of people are being asked, hosts are being asked to voice the representations of sponsors or underwriters. I wonder if that.
I'm sure MailChimp will be on his show pretty soon.
No doubt. Is that just part of the deal? You know, it's sort of big band sound may not come back, but the here's the stuff we want you to eat does.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned how this was a thing back in the, you know, earliest days of talk shows and, you know, feeding the dog the Alpo on the stage or, you know, whatever it was they did exactly back then. You know, and it's coming back now. And what happened in between was that you had this brief period where, you know, TV was a giant mass medium and you had like one guy, Johnny Carson, who's ruled late night for decades and had, you know, tens of millions of viewers. And now it's much more atomized. There are many more competitors. The audiences are smaller. The profit margins are smaller. And you just got to do a, you know, lot more selling on various platforms to get that coal shoveled into the engine. I mean, and you know, Colbert was doing, you know, also often very ironic, but product placements on the Colbert Report. You know, it was a very long running joke on there. You know, you remember his favorite son presidential campaign in 2008 in South Carolina, short lived and sponsored by Doritos.
Yes, no less.
So it's that again is a bit in character.
We wonder how tough he's going to be here and what you think of his first nights out. I want to listen back just a little bit. This was 2006, Colbert Report. During one of his Better Know a District routines, he interviewed Republican Congressman, this was Lynn Westmoreland, represented Georgia's 8th District from 05 to 07. Westmoreland had co-sponsored a bill to place the Ten Commandments in the House of Representatives and the Senate. So Colbert asked him to list the Ten Commandments. It wasn't pretty.
What are the Ten Commandments?
You want me to name them?
Yeah,
all?
Please.
Don't murder. Don't lie. Mm-hmm. Don't steal. I can't name them all.
That was tough. That was tough. And man, Lynn Westmoreland was left there with 7 unnamed. Alyssa, from what you've seen so far this week, does he bring that toughness to late night?
This may be heretical, but the interview segments have actually been one of the things I've been most disappointed about with the new Late Show. Colbert has spent a lot of time setting up his guests in a way that can almost come across as obsequious, whether he's sort of singing the praises of Jeb Bush's good intentions or introducing, you know, Elon Musk as a real-life Tony Stark. Certainly, you know, he's very complimentary of Joe Biden in a way that, you know, perhaps is appropriate given that they were discussing his son's death, but is a little bit fawning. And then what's been even worse is some of the questions. With both Musk and the head of Uber, he has he's used this rhetorical style that I find very frustrating, where he has sort of laid out the worst criticisms against the company, that it's, in Uber's case, that it's ruining jobs for taxi drivers,
yeah.
In SpaceX's case, that they're not landing the rockets successfully, and then just set it up for these guys to knock them down. And some of this is a matter of format. He doesn't have a lot of time. But there's been a real element of corporate PR, especially with the tech interviews, in a way that I have found just disappointing, given that Colbert said he was looking forward to sort of being himself and being more engaged. And it's a little obsequious. And this may upset some people, but I thought one of the things that was striking about his interview with Vice President Biden last night was that the answers were excellent. The questions were the kind of thing that, you know, good housekeeping would ask. You can set up these questions to be a little bit more probing and interesting, but phrasing something as, you know, how does your faith get you through this is, I mean, that's, again, it's setting up the nine pins to be just knocked straight down. And I thought Biden's answers were fantastic, and that's what made it a really interesting and revealing interview.
And but, newsworthy when he said he still wasn't sure that he had the emotional sort of frame of mind to do it, run for president.
Absolutely. But it was, you know, these are milquetoast questions. These are not good questions yet, I've been disappointed.
Let's hear a little bit of that. This was not political yet. We'll go there. But just talking with billionaire, entrepreneur, inventor Elon Musk, on Wednesday night, Colbert likened him, as Alyssa, you say, to Tony Stark, the a.k.a. Iron Man, played on screen by Robert Downey Jr.
People have called you the real Tony Stark. Okay, you've got your finger in so many different advanced technologies. As I said, SpaceX, Tesla. Now you've got Solar City and the solar pack that people put in their houses. Are you sincerely trying to save the world?
I'm trying to do good things, yeah.
James, does a late night host have to be obsequious, is Alyssa's word, in some degree, to get the big names to come on the show to make it successful?
I think it depends on the big name. These are people who generally will do, say, journalistic interviews that are not necessarily going to be, obsequious. I think I would agree with Alyssa about the interviews up to last night. Mm-hmm. I actually thought that the Biden and the Travis Kalanick, interviews were the
Uber guy?
Easily. Yeah, I thought those were easily the two best they did, although they were quite different. I could see how the Biden interview could come across as fawning. To me, it was admiring, and it drew on. And this requires a little sort of extra textual information, but they're similar experience. Two men whose Catholic faith is very important to them, who have suffered great personal losses. Colbert lost his father and two brothers when he was a child in a plane crash, and they alluded to that during the interview. And I think using that in the manner in which he used it, I think that helped draw the fantastic responses he got out of Joe Biden. Granted, it was a very different interview than you would do, say, were Biden now a presidential candidate. And I thought that he did a better job of striking, a more inquisitorial tone with the Uber chief than he did with Elon Musk. I will say, though, that, I think he's still learning how to, although he's got, you can see that very quick mind, he's got to unlearn the habit of doing those interviews in character, where there's always sort of a go-to, attitude to come from. And I think some old fans of his from The Rapport in general, will be disappointed to see that, on The Late Show, he's not there as an advocate. And furthermore, I don't think he ever saw himself that way, although many of his fans did.
He seemed friendly, I have to say, to Joe Biden. Not an advocate. I mean, he was saying, kind of run, Joe, run, wasn't he?
I'm sorry. I mean, sort of an advocate for a particular political position.
Well, that would be a particular party.
Well, but
it'd be a particular party, but it wasn't coming from a standpoint of, I admire what you do on this. I mean, seemed like, it was in a very personal register. Colbert is pretty admittedly liberal himself.
Yeah. Alyssa, sorry.
If I can jump in for a second, I think part of what's been interesting about these first couple of days is that niceness is an attribute that takes about as long to calibrate as meanness, right? We think about niceness as something that's easy to express and that it's always sort of clear. But I do think that Colbert is still figuring out how to make niceness and sincerity work in ways that are a little bit more precision tuned for the show. And I agree with James that I do think Colbert's admiration for Biden is really deep and really genuine. The thing that just got me was the idea of him sort of cheering up Biden the same way he was sort of advocating for Bush too, right? I don't know that Colbert has developed the sort of baseline of discernment yet where we know what's important to him on the show and what's not. And I understand the rah-rah energy of an early show is really important. And I do think to a certain extent, when you're starting out booking people again, you want folks to feel like you're having a good experience on the show. Maybe all of this will settle down in a month or 2 months. But I think that it's important to remember that niceness is not actually easy to express in a compelling way. And I think that Colbert is still working some of that out.
I have to say his friendliness towards Jeb Bush seemed fairly more tongue-in-cheek to me than his warmth toward Joe Biden. Let's listen to some of that. This was just last night. He started with the question just straight to the Veep, will you run for president? Colbert pops the question. Biden first dodges here with a joke.
I want to talk about the elephant in the room, which in this case is a donkey. Do you have anything you'd like to tell us right now about your plans?
Yes. I think you should run for president again, and I'll be your vice president.
I think you should run, said the Veep. Of course, Colbert had that kind of faux run before, but he came back to it. Here he is, and then Biden gets more serious.
Sir, you said recently, you said this weekend that you don't know if you are emotionally prepared to run for president.
Look, I don't think any man or woman should run for president unless they can look at the folks out there and say, I promise you, you have my whole heart, my whole soul, my energy, and my passion to do this. And I'd be lying if I said that I knew I was there.
Now, Biden said that before, but at this moment, given everything that's going on with Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders and the whole thing, that was news. He wrapped up the interview with the vice president with a pretty strong embrace, claiming to speak for the whole audience.
Not that there aren't good people on both sides running, but I think we'd all be very happy if you did run. And if you don't, I know that your service to the country is something we should all salute. So thank you so much. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, Vice President Joe Biden.
Straight man, Stephen Colbert. Let's go to our listener, Sherry in Portsmouth, Virginia. Sherry, what do you hear? What do you think?
Hi, Tom. I hear taking difficult topics and helping people be able to approach them and listen to people from radically different perspectives be able to discuss these difficult things, politics. I'm from a place here where we're dealing with Confederate flags in front of monuments and, you know, the Underground Railroad versus, you know, how the slave trade worked, because it all happened right here where I am in Portsmouth, Virginia. And so what Stephen Colbert does and Jon Stewart, and they've just allowed people to be able to approach these difficult topics without shame or blame is the way I like to put it, and be able to, like, hopefully do some healing in terms of being able to approach these topics that way. And I really appreciate it. And we're going to be starting a low-pod FM radio station, and we're taking a page from their book in terms of how to, like, make sure these topics get covered and people are able to participate in a real way.
Sherry,
that's what democracy is. So they're helping.
Got it. Jumping right in there in Portsmouth. Happy for the Colbert way. We'll see how it unfolds here. Thank you, Sherry. One more. Huron Township in Michigan. Tom, you're on.
Yes, hi, Tom. I wanted to pick up on something that Alyssa said about the interview style. I think everybody, for the most part, would agree that Colbert is funny and he's witty and he's clever and incredibly versatile and talented.
Yeah.
But he's a pretty awful interviewer. And it may be...
In what way, Tom? What do you mean?
Well, I'm thinking it may come from the character Colbert on Comedy Central not quite transferring... He's competitive. He interrupts constantly. He'll ask a question, and as the person starts to answer, he has to get in and comment on the answer as it's coming out.
Yeah.
And, of course, the person he's interviewing stops responding. And, you know, you as an interviewer must know that's not really a great way to go.
Well, I mean, I interrupt sometimes, too, when you want to drive toward a point that someone seems to be evading or not going for. I mean, there's a time and place for that, isn't there, Tom?
I think that's absolutely true. But I think what, at least for the first three nights, what I've seen Colbert doing is just interviewing randomly. I don't think he's ever pushing anybody toward anything. He's just getting his comments. And it reminds me a little bit of what Carson used to do. Not often. He was very good as an interviewer, but every once in a while he'd start interviewing himself. And that's sort of what's going on there. I'll ask you a question, and then as you respond, I'll tell you what I think about the question.
The music in Stephen Colbert's mind, and we know there's a lot in there. Tom, I appreciate your call. Alyssa Rosenberg with the Washington Post, please stand by. James Poniewozik with the New York Times. Behind us here, night two, rapper Kendrick Lamar performed really electrifying medley of songs off his new album. We got part of that medley right here from his song King Kunta. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Hi, everybody. Tom here. I'm glad you're joining us for this On Point podcast. Before we get back to the show, I'd like to tell you about another podcast you might enjoy, too, Dear Sugar Radio. Join hosts Cheryl Strayed and Steve Almond as they field questions about love, sex, work, guilt, money, you name it. That's Dear Sugar Radio. You can find it at WBUR.org/Dear Sugar or subscribe on iTunes.
Go mouth mammoth.
I was gonna kill a couple rappers, but they did it to themselves. Body suicidal, they didn't even need my help. This is elementary, I'd probably go to jail. Shoot at your identity and bounce to the left.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about Stephen Colbert's debut as host of The Late Show, what Colbert we're getting here, and where TV talk late night is going, with Alyssa Rosenberg of The Washington Post and James Poniewozik of The New York Times. We've got a Republican pollster, Frank Lutz, recently did a focus group on Donald Trump to find out why people liked him so much. Republicans, one supporter said, "We know his goal is to make America great again. It's on his hat." So Colbert advised other candidates to sum up their platforms on campaign hats with pithy slogans on the front. Here's a couple of suggestions he had for Republican Lindsey Graham and Democrat Hillary Clinton.
Senator Lindsey Graham, show off your Southern pride and your Middle East policy with a festive bonnet that says, "I do declare war on Iran." I know for a fact that Hillary Clinton has a hat that completely explains her email scandal. Unfortunately, she erased it.
Yeah, ha, ha. And to my caller, our caller from Michigan's point that he's a little worried about Colbert cutting off his guests. Here's Colbert on night two talking with Scarlett Johansson. Kept interrupting her until she put a stop to that.
Well, why not? It's beautiful. It's Paris.
It is a beautiful city.
It's very...
New York's a beautiful city, too.
Yeah, New York is a beautiful city.
It's not a contest.
I absolutely love New York. I haven't left. I'm
You don't live here. You don't live here.
I do. I live here. Stop it.
I apologize. You're the guest. Oh, please, go ahead.
Yes.
Okay, please. You are the guest. Alyssa, James, here's a few reviews from our listeners here online. On Facebook, Scott says, "Judging from the first episode, missed the second. Glad to see he's still got at least some of his political edge. I was terrified that CBS brass would try to neuter him. That will be interesting over time." Here's another. James says, "In this day and age, humor belongs to the subversives. We need more subversives rather than mainstream variety shows. Colbert may adjust his approach over time to accommodate this." Alyssa, your peers may demand that. And here's Gemley says, "Maybe I was used to Letterman's barbed satire and ironic delivery, but I found Colbert to be too eager, too frenetic, and worst of all, unfunny. With all that was riding on the opening show, were those really the best bits they could come up with? Pushing weak gags, so much faux enthusiasm just makes them fall flatter. Maybe these are growing pains." How much evolution do you see coming, Alyssa?
Probably a lot. When you're doing a television show every single night, you have a lot of opportunities to improvise and try new things. It's so hard to review a show like this from its first episode, much less its first week or its first month. So I anticipate we're a ways away from the final version of the show.
James, from what you see so far, I mean, Jimmy Fallon by the second night has got better numbers than Colbert. So is he going to be tempted to go to that sort of sunny, smiling, Jimmy loves everybody way?
No. I mean, I don't think so. For one thing, that's a losing game, you know, to be another Fallon, you know, when the world already has one. But I think it's a little, you know, pat and knee jerk to assume that if Stephen Colbert is coming across as, you know, optimistic and fun having on his show, that it's the man who's like, you know, executed some corporate dictate that he be this way to, you know, please the masses and keep them happy in their opiated lives. You know, I mean, I think that, you know, Stephen Colbert is a performer who loves performing. He's actually enthusiastic about a lot of things. You know, I do think that, you know, that the first week has been, you know, a mixed bag. I thought that, you know, the first hour seemed a little overthought. There was some very good stuff in it and some not so good stuff in it. The second hour was pretty forgettable, and I thought, you know, the third with Biden was a really terrific, like, regular show. But these shows always end up very different a half year, a year in, that you know, you're building a boat while you're sailing it, you know. And one sort of comparison that Colbert, unfortunately or fortunately, has to fight against is with himself and his own show, The Colbert Report. One other thing that was distinctive about it was that it was very unusual among late night shows that it started out like almost, it changed, but almost fully formed with a sense of what it was going to be. You know, the first night you had
the
that monologue on truthiness, and the character was there. And most important, it was just, it was a thesis statement. It was, this is what this show is about. This is its purpose. This is, you know, this is the idea that it's going to execute. That was fantastic. It also almost never happens in late night.
Here was that moment from the original Colbert Report. 2005, new word comes into the English language thanks to Stephen Colbert. It was just a joke, but the word caught on, sign of the times. The word was, as James says, truthiness.
You're looking at a straight shooter, America. I will speak to you in plain, simple English. And that brings us to tonight's word. Truthiness. Now, I'm sure some of the word police, the wordinistas over at Webster's, are going to say, hey, that's not a word. Well, anybody who knows me know that I'm no fan of dictionaries or reference books. They're elitist.
And truthiness is the way of the land, or was, and Stephen Colbert called it out. Al in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Al, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. It seems to me that everybody's trying to evaluate him with an eye towards journalistic honesty. If they want the CBS Evening News, they can tune into that. But with Colbert, I think what you should really be looking for is just pure entertainment value. If he keeps your attention and keeps you entertained, gives you a little laugh along the way, I think that's pretty much what you should expect out of the show, and it'll evolve in that direction more and more, I think.
But Al, is that still fair on this side of The Daily Show and even The Colbert Report? I mean, these were shows to which they were not the evening news. They had a ton of attitude, but a lot of people went there to calibrate their thinking about quite serious issues.
Yeah, I think that shows that a lot of, particularly the younger generation, and I'm 61 years old, but I think a lot of the younger people, my children's age, late 20s, early 30s, were so turned off by the regular evening news type format that we grew up with, that they turned to Colbert for a combination of entertainment and news. And sometimes they may have had trouble distinguishing between the two. But like I say, I think anybody that's looking for pure journalism and journalistic honesty and detached approaches to interviewing guests, I think they're going to be disappointed, because I don't think that's really what he's all about.
Al, I appreciate your call. Alyssa, what about it now on this side of The Daily Show and Colbert's own decade at The Colbert Report? Do you come to him in this new venue thinking, well, it's just going to be entertainment, or do you have a certain bar higher than you might have had for Jay Leno or Johnny Carson, or right now for Jimmy Fallon, for something more serious here? Not the news, but, I mean, if he's got any of Stewart's mantle on his shoulder, there was a lot of weighty analysis in with all the laughs.
Well, I have to say, I think that I'm judging Colbert in terms of his interviews by the standards that he set for himself. And I asked him explicitly about this at the Television Critics Association press tour in August. I asked how the interview style would change, and he said he was really looking forward to dropping the sort of moron persona that defined his interviews at the Colbert Report and be driven by his own interests and intentions. And I totally agree that this is an entertainment show. I think the problem is a lot of these questions aren't terribly entertaining. Certainly with Vice President Biden, he elicited some really interesting responses. And I do think that that interview functioned better than the other ones that he'd done so far. But right now, Colbert's statements of interest are not terribly interesting, right? We're not getting a particularly, you know, specific perspective from him. And so I, you know, I'm a critic. I know the difference between news and entertainment.
Yeah.
But my quibble here is that this isn't entertaining.
Maybe he's surely trying to figure out exactly where to put those feet. Let's listen to a little more. Here he was announcing he was launching his own campaign website for the undecided voter called Indecision 2016. Very Colbertian. And he'd sell merchandise, like a 16-sided dice, much like the one on the in the board of Dungeons & Dragons. As the screen behind him was showing the faces of a rotund Chris Christie, white-haired Bernie Sanders, impish Bobby Jindal, Colbert did his thing.
You can roll for an orc, a wizard, or a mystical woodland Jindal.
Hello!
Better yet, you can you guess his real name? You can send a clear message to pollsters with a campaign bumper sticker that proudly declares, "Bite me, it's still 2015.
Okay, there's some Colbert. On Tuesday, you got GOP candidate Florida Governor Jeb Bush to criticize his brother George Bush's presidency, and Colbert showed he can still think fast on his feet.
In the last 3 or 4 years of my brother's tenure, he didn't veto things. He didn't bring order, fiscal restraint.
The way you differ from your brother George is that he was not conservative enough.
On spending. Look, they call me Vito Corleone in Florida. Because I vetoed 2,500
really?
Separate line items in the budget.
You know, he is an anti-hero in that movie.
Yeah.
James, I mean, there he is. He shows he knows still how to sort of put his boat into the middle of things there.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it shows one thing that always served him really well in the Colbert Report, which was not just performing the character, but he knows a lot of stuff. He's interested in certain things. He has a quick mind and can react in the moment. I think the learning process that we're seeing here is him figuring out a way to do that where he doesn't have the automatic go-to of this persona. Get that to work, you know, because you end up with these confusing situations like that Scarlett Johansson bit where it's like, well, is this a fluff interview? Is this adversarial? You know, are you interrupting and, you know, pressing an argument with them? Or are you letting them promote their thing? And you know, it's definitely a learning process. And as Alyssa says, it's important to do it, and not antithetical, to do it in a way that's entertaining for an audience. I think we sort of have this false dichotomy where we treat, you know, funny and serious as opposites, and they're not. One thing that has been so great about Stephen Colbert is that he's been able to be both at the same time. You know, but now he has to figure out how to be both at the same time in a different format.
Betsy's calling from Sudbury, Massachusetts. Hi, Betsy. You're on the air.
Yes. Hi, Tom. I would say that my biggest problem so far with the show has been that I feel like I'm watching a character and that I'm not watching him.
Did you think it would be something else at this point? And are you so sure that's not him?
Well, I still feel like I'm watching him perform.
Mm-hmm.
There's a performance going on as opposed to when you watch Jimmy Fallon, he may be performing, but you feel like it's just him. You're not watching him perform.
Yeah, yeah. Alyssa, what do you say to that?
I guess I think that there's something slightly unrealistic about thinking that anyone who's up on stage is ever giving us their actual self.
But how you feel about what they project may be the point here. And Betsy feels like Jimmy, for all his performance, is Jimmy. And Stephen is still this middle distance created character, maybe?
Well, I just wonder if who he is somewhat more mannered and reserved than someone like Fallon or Kimmel. You know, he's got the really well-tailored suits. He dresses well. He has sort of formal good manners, right? I mean, the honorifics that he used for Vice President Biden were very correct in terms of formal etiquette terms. And I think maybe that's a little bit of a different persona than one we're used to seeing. So maybe it doesn't feel real because what we've come to expect from real late night hosts, and making scare quotes with my fingers there for anyone who can't see me, is, you know, is something a little bit more informal and loose. And maybe Colbert is just a slightly more formal person than what we're used to seeing behind that desk.
Chris in West Hartford, Connecticut. What do you think, Chris?
Hi, Tom. Yeah, I'm missing David Letterman so far. I really like Colbert. I like his bright mind. I'm hoping he can bring some of the same broad insight and sharp incision that Letterman brought. I'm not seeing much of it. I'd get some hope from the brilliant Oreo sketch. I really love that.
Yeah.
And I hope to see more of that. Less interruption, less fawning.
Missing a little David Letterman with the acerbic piece there. One more, if I may. Kevin in Savannah, Georgia. Kevin, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom. I think Colbert just has to kind of find his tone. This wasn't a bad week, but he has always found his tone before on Strangers with Candy and Daily Show as correspondent, Harvey Birdman on Colbert Report. So he's just got to find his tone. However, I think all of Late Night is falling victim to the fact that the next day you can just watch the best bits on YouTube.
Yeah, no kidding. Everybody gets sliced and diced. Kevin, I appreciate your call from Savannah. James, I find myself with a fair amount of confidence in Stephen Colbert's intelligence over time to figure this out. Does it matter? Is this now, even in a more serious way, one of the rudders under our, I don't know, national cultural discourse more than in Carson Leno days?
It's funny. These shows are, in a way, both more and less influential, or influential in a different way than they were back. You know, there used to be this thing of, you know, you could see how an election or the public mood was going by the late night monologues. And I think the monologues are not, you know, as important, you know, as they used to be in a way. But on the other hand, these moments that, you know, these bits that go viral and so on are very broadly shared and watched in a way that the shows aren't. And, you know, somebody like John Oliver can be very influential, you know, even to people who don't have HBO now.
Yeah.
By the way, his stuff goes viral.
The currency flows very far and very wide, even sliced and diced. Depends what you put in all those little packets. Terrific talking with the two of you. James Poniewozik, chief television critic now for the New York Times. James, thank you very much for spending a little time with us today.
Thanks so much.
Alyssa Rosenberg covers pop culture for the Washington Post's opinions section. Alyssa, you're terrific. Thanks for joining us.
A pleasure as always.
We will go out with Toby Keith, musical guest last night on The Late Show with Stephen Colbert and his song, Rum is the Reason. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Thanks for joining us.
Done, but I'm having fun sailing on the deep blue sea. My whole body goes numb from a bottle of dark rum and the sun sinking down on me. My catch of the day is a tall Cuba Libra, chase him down with 12-ounce curls.